stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM Tivoli Talk conference call. The topic for today is OM 4.20. Today's call is being recorded, and all lines will be open and interactive. Please use your mute function while not speaking to cut down on background noise. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Fabio Tazzi. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good day, everybody. Welcome to our third session for 2009 of the Tivoli Tech Talks from the D Development Organization. Topic of the day, as we heard, is the OmegaMon PE for DB2 420. So the release that will be available soon for our customers and for you guys on the field. And the speaker of the day is Steve Fafard, who's actually, you know, the release manager, product manager of the product. So said that, I'll just turn it over to Steve to walk you guys through the deck. Steve, it's all yours.
Okay, good morning, afternoon, folks. I hope, is there anyone that cannot see the slide at this time, the opening slide?
Actually, just when it went away, Steve.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me try something here. Is it there now?
Oh.
Yeah, I just see a black screen.
You might want to stop presenting and start and restart it again, maybe.
It appears as though I'm not in. Am I not in the meeting anymore?
See you, and actually see you with the, you know, with the icon of presenter.
Because I don't see the meeting room myself. So I'm rejoining.
Yeah.
It was working just before the call opened. I apologize for the delay.
Just FYI, guys, this is the older version of the software. WebDialogs.com is the IBM latest version. It's called Unite, same time. It's WebDialogs.com. That's the latest and greatest, and it works a lot better than this old version.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only trick with that is it's a for-charge usage, right? You're paid like 3 cents per minute per participant.
No, yeah, it's owned by IBM. Web Dialogues is the one internal users are supposed to use now.
Okay, I'll look into that. The last time I checked, it was Unite was even internally was pay per use. But if they made something available for us to use for free, I'll jump on it.
Okay, I'm rejoining. I shut it down and restarted. So let's see if this helps.
That's very strange. Now there are two Steve Fafard in the session, but
you're right. There are.
First time I've seen this. All right, it's coming.
You got it there now? Okay, so don't listen to the other Steve Fafard, just listen to this one. All right, so now we should have a full screen here in slideshow mode. So again, Steve Fafard, as Fabio introduced me, I'm product and development manager for OmegaMon XE for DB2 Performance Expert. We're going to talk about version 4.20. Release date is unannounced as of yet, but it is scheduled to be the end of April of this year. So we will cover the objectives of 4.20, take a look at some of the content. I'm going to just go through highlights here. A lot of this material, especially the detailed material, provided by some of my technical team, and I hope I can do it justice. And we'll do some question and answer. The lines are open, so question and answer is available throughout the call. So moving on to the objectives slide, number 3. And so, as we noted here, 4.20 is really about, if you recall, that this is a merger of Kendall OmegaMon and IBM DB2 PE and PM. This is about continuing to merge these two products together and building the foundation for the completion of that convergence of the two products. These are very two advanced technologies that were brought together to provide hopefully best of breed DB2 monitoring, what we believe it is. And but these are also very complex architectures, and there's been some challenges in bringing those together. So this is all about a lot of work under the covers. Under the covers, very little functionality you'll see in 4.2.0, but really working to complete the convergence at the server level, complete the convergence at the user interface level, steps in that direction. One of the main enhancements that we have in 4.2.0 is in the installation configuration area, an area that's been very challenging for, I think, for all of the Omegamons and certainly Megamon XC for DB2 PE, having to merge all of the configuration information from the two components together into one. So we'll see how we are migrating away from kind of a parameter-driven, just a list of parameters and setting them for each DB2 system and LPAR, and move it more to a test-driven configuration. And then, as I mentioned, as part of this convergence, is not simply about just being technically pure, but that this improves total cost of ownership for the customer experience by completing that convergence at both, again, the user interface and the server level. Moving ahead now to slide number 4. So content summary here, I touched on them a little bit on the prior slide, which really what kind of what the objectives are. So we're going to look at the configuration tool changes, or ICAT. We are migrating to a what we call a monitoring profiles approach. Included in the release is a completely near rewrite of the configuration guide, and that's to support the changes in ICAT. We have some functionality changes to the Tivoli Enterprise portal via a new navigator item that might be of interest. This is going to, you'll see it later on. It's available for all of the Omegamons to exploit if they choose. There's just regular, there's many things that we get as being a Tivoli Omegamon as part of being the Tivoli Omegamon family, so that are outside of strictly DB2 or Omegamon DB2 PE. I won't cover these. You've probably seen these from the various other Omegamon presentations that you participated in. But things like we now support updates in the tech integration, omnibus integration. There are other serviceability items coming out, again, as part of the Omegamon family. As noted here, we will have a high availability hub. TEMS on the ZOS platform, just as the others will, and we support that through our configuration and the configuration provided by the common components of ICAT, support for the latest ISA, IBM Support Assistant. And then this is the kind of the underpinning. This is where all of the dirty work is so more bullets here. And these are not things that are visible, but we'll talk about them as is appropriate. We made some improvements in memory management. This metadata design is all about kind of a data stream approach to normalizing requests for DB2 monitoring data. Again, under the covers, this kind of improves the whole maintainability and the architecture of the product. And this is a foundation for future exploitation. It's not actually exploited yet, but the foundation's built. Continued... This P server subtask is about collection via the DB2 API versus DB2 control blocks, an area that obviously is potential for problems in the field as DB2 changes control blocks on us. The migration to DB2 RRSAF connection versus CAF, I skipped over one. But this is actually was implemented in the field in 4.10, and of course that's now exploited in 4.20. The implementation of an MBS subsystem is in the framework or in the underpinnings as well, and then the 64-bit support. Then other just cleanup items, some obsolete operating system and DB2 and IMS and KIX, et cetera, releases were in the in the product going dating back to, well, many, many old versions of ZOS and DB2, and all of that's been cleaned up and cleared out to improve maintainability. And then in the quality area, excuse me, which is an area that many of you have experienced, that 4.10 has been having a lot of problems, especially in the CPU area. So we have made some significant improvements in our test environment, especially in the workload area, in that, which is really what's hitting us in CPU. So there's a lot of improvements in that area, and we'll probably have more of a Q&A on that. So I'm moving ahead now to slide number 5, just to kind of give you a sense of where our investment was in 2008, and kind of break it down by these major categories. And this is just development. This is not discussing the APAR backlog. But we're really focused in on convergence roadmap, consolidation at the server level, consolidation of the product so that it's using one collection mechanism and really improving that overall maintainability, a little bit on the user interface, and then in the small amount of functionality that we're going to look at today. Okay, this is actually a repeat of the prior summary slide. So let's take a look here at the first one, the ICAT configuration tool enhancements. I'm on slide number 7. So the goal here was to, as everyone likes to hear, enable the focus on using the product rather than spending so much time on installation configuration. And it's been a challenge in many of products. So clearly we want to reduce that effort, not just in the initial setup, but also managing this configuration going forward, and really implement an approach that mirrors the way you need to approach your monitoring for DB2 instead of an approach that is based on just going through a list of parameters. So the implementation is kind of split into two parts. There's a initial product setup, which covers all the kind of common functionalities, regardless of what your monitoring scheme may be or your monitoring approach may be. And so this focuses on just basic monitoring keywords, regardless of whether it's a production test or a certain type of application, and user interface configuration. Then moves to a separate section that's all about defining profiles for DB2 subsystems, or maybe a profile that, as I say, may be a production profile or a certain site profile. And then these profiles are defined, and they can be reused for several DB2 systems. So we're going to take a look at how it was before. Moving ahead to slide number 8, we'll spend some time, not too much time, on what it looks like today. I imagine many folks know what the ICAT setup looks like today, and spend a little bit more time on how we've made the changes for 4.2.0 for DB2. So as you know, we're on ICAT per LPAR on slide number 8. Here we're in ICAT per LPAR, create an RTE, configure per DB2 system within the RTE. So it's really an RTE approach, and then use that RTE as a model for other DB2 systems. So there's an animation on the next slides here. Try not to go too fast. So this is kind of pre-OMPE version 4.20, a couple of different approaches here, an SMP set of SMPE libs, and then your ICAT for one LPAR, and then the RTEs and that you built for that specific LPAR pointing to the DB2s on that LPAR. Repeat the process for LPAR B, an ICAT set of installation libraries, base libraries, and RTE for a system, I should say SysB, and then your DB2 subsystems for that particular LPAR, and then repeat the process for LPAR Z. Probably all familiar with this method. Can be quite time-consuming. Not only is it parameter-driven, it's LPAR-driven. It's a very physical implementation. The process here in terms of steps, really not going to go through this line by line, but you can see that there's step A, step B, and then go back to step A, and then 1, 2, 3 is repeated in C for each of the LPARs that you're defining. Another method that's employed by ICAT, again today, prior to OMPE 4.20, ICAT libs shared across an LPAR, and that's really the significant change. Same thing with the base libs, but you still need to create an RTE for each LPAR and configure the subsystems for that LPAR. As you can see, the animation here, I hope this is not going too fast. LPAR A, LPAR B, LPAR Z, with an RTE for each one of those. And then that's that process I just defined there, you know, modified, the prior set of steps slightly modified just for sharing an ICAT across all the LPARs and the base across the LPARs. There's the model RTE with batch ICAT rollout. And so, again, this is something that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Create a batch PARM deck, and then transfer that PARM deck and modify it for each LPAR to go generate your RTEs and your subsystems for the different LPARs. I'm going to skip over slide 14. Again, this is just a variance of what we just looked at. I suspect many of you are already familiar with this process. So what's new? I'm on slide number 15 now. So I touched on it already in discussing it, and we could look at some slides here that hopefully convey it a little more pictorially. So it's all about many DB2 subsystems in the large environments that we are all very familiar with, but many of them are monitored in the same way, the same type of configuration. So the example here, the basic example, you have a dev system and maybe even a system programmer system that things are initially rolled out on and do some initial testing and then development and then for application development, an application test system, and multiple production environments. And so this concept is that you may have a monitoring scheme for each one of these types of environments. You may even have a monitoring scheme for a type of application. It's completely flexible as to what type of profile you want to set up. So instead of configuring, on slide 16, instead of configuring each single member, we define a number of profiles, and then we associate that profile to the DB2 environment that we want to monitor. And so and there's a note here about that changes done for a profile will be effective for all the subsystems for which the profile is assigned, and this is automatic. So, again, assign a profile to a monitoring profile to the subsystems, and it picks up those configurations across. So it eases the administration across the entire monitoring environment. On slide 17, we see, again, the old approach that we covered in the previous slides. Down the second half of the screen of the DB2 monitoring profile approach, configure profiles, we create profile members, and these profiles are where we specify things like that are specific to a DB2 subsystem, not the things that are irrelevant to the DB2 subsystem itself, but just the DB2 specific stuff, and then we do an associate, which creates these DB2 prof members, and then generate the runtime jobs, or create runtime jobs to create LPAR specific members. On slide 18, we take a look at some of the some screenshots of what the how ICAT ISPF interface has changed. So item number one there, basic product setup, that's the one I mentioned before, that's for settings that are common across all DB2 monitoring environments, regardless of what your particular application or approach to monitoring may be. So that's where the VTAM classic interface and ISPF interface and et cetera, all those user interfaces are set up, CLA, your Apple IDs, et cetera. Item number two is where we focus in on the changes. So you select configure your monitoring profile. This is where you're going to go in and define a profile, as you can see down below, monitoring profile configuration. And then from there, we're created a demo profile here, and we're looking at the DB2 related items that we can specify for that specific monitoring profile called demo. So that's where, again, things like object analysis, near-term history, snapshot history, et cetera, associated with the DB2 system are set. On to slide 19, Then we go and configure the DB2 subsystem monitoring. There's a couple of screenshots here. After you select number three, selection number one and three are highlighted. We associate DB2 subsystem with a monitoring profile. So we select that. We get a list here of the DB2 subsystems and their description and the profile that they're associated with. And this is where you specify the subsystems that or the profiles rather that you associate with the subsystem. One of the things that's really nice, and this has already received quite positive feedback from our ESP customers. We have about half, five, I think, ESP customers, and we're also running an internal ESP. This overview of the current configuration, letter V here. So this gives you a kind of a tabular view of the DB2 subsystems and the profiles they're associated with and kind of what the main configuration options are highlighted for each of the subsystems and the profiles that that are defined. So this gives you at a glance view of your configuration. Very exciting from the field. And that's slide number 20. So this is a variation of using the model RTE. To be honest, I haven't looked at this one myself very much, but this is it's the DB2 profile approach is on the top, and we can see that there's the extended approach below. It's essentially the same thing, but just creating a model RTE from the configuration from the profile members and rolling that out to the targets. So migration for customers coming from 4.10 or 3.10 with the non-profiles approach of setting up configuration through ICAT, the profile migration is automatic. You simply invoke ICAT and open the RTEs. Now, if you use the batch ICAT before, you can use that as well, but once you start it up, new profile members are created, the generic profiles based on or a generic profile based on the current configuration, and then you could use that as if nothing changed. It's just it creates a profile from the current configurations for each RTE that you select. So in summary, I think we covered it. It's about defining profiles and monitoring approach instead of simply going through parameter after parameter after parameter and helping you hopefully have a more intuitive approach to what it is that you or how you want to approach monitoring for your DB2 environment. This is just a sample of you know maybe some configuration parameters that that might be appropriate for different types of environments. The notion here is that in the future we have plans to provide some predefined monitoring profiles that you can select. And so this kind of factorially says for an application development environment, I may want to be kind of heavy real-time and heavy near-term, but not looking at historical too much. To have a profile that kind of mirrors that type of environment. For your test system, very much the same, maybe heavy real-time and near-term for near-term history for analyzing application changes, and a little bit of historical now we're looking at in our test environment to kind of see how things are performing in the test environment. Switch over to production, we might have a profile that's more oriented to historical, so kind of like toning down the real-time settings and the near-term history settings, and but maybe a little more stronger toward the long-term historical, the performance warehouse, and that type of collection to minimize the impact of the of monitoring in that environment. So just some notions of what might be some predefined monitoring profiles. So the other item we mentioned at the beginning here is these changes to the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. This is something that the MegaOne DB2 team worked with the framework folks, the ITM folks, rather, to develop quite some months ago now. And this is part of the what's required from our viewpoint to migrate our PE client, the Fat Java PE client users, to the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. Again, the Tivoli Enterprise Portal and the 3270 VTAM Classic are the two strategic interfaces going forward. OMPE currently has more than just those two interfaces. In addition to the CUA, there's also this PE client, which is a Fat Java client. So one of the functionalities there that customers, our DB2PE legacy customers, are very fond of is kind of the navigation approach, and differs from Tivoli Enterprise Portal. So as part of making that migration smoother and more enticing, we came up with this notion here. So you're all familiar with the current Tivoli Enterprise Portal navigation on slide number 26 with the navigation tree over there on the left. Inside, and then right-clicking to get a list of things that you can possibly link to off of a given node in that tree. In this case, thread activity. You can see that you can select detail from there. You can go to activity by plan, package, distributed allied threads, etc., all the way down those choices. With 4.2.0, that doesn't go away. That's still available, but you'll see on slide number 27 that there's those same sets of items that you would could right-click from the nav tree are now appearing up on the available as a horizontal navigation item across the top of the screen here, and clearly that can be deleted as well. Is that you can close that box with the X over in the upper right-hand corner. But this mirrors a little bit more what the PE client looks like. Again, this is kind of one of these enticing the migration to the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. There are other things that we have on the plate in the future that will assist in getting customers off that PE client and onto the TEP. This is the only one we're able to get into 4.2.0 in this time frame. So not much more to it than that, simply just a new navigator option. So now we get into some of the stuff that's maybe a little more technical, and a little technical meaning that more under the covers kind of stuff, and not as much bell and whistle types of things that customers can latch on to. There was a need to be able to improve or manage kind of the memory requirements. And so there's the under the MegaMon task is the PE server, as we call it, subtask. And the current situation is that you can only turn all of them off or all of them on. And so there's an implementation of a new subcommand to shut off a given PE server subtask to stop it from monitoring a specific DB2 subsystem. So and that's supported through ICAT as well. Kind of a RAS item, if you will. It's been asked for some time for customers to be able to have that granularity. Now we're looking at some on the batch side, a batch reporting, one of the very powerful items that comes into the product. As a result of the merger of MegaMon and DB2PE, the batch DB2PE batch reporting is kind of the hallmark of reporting for DB2. But hordes and hordes of SMF data, DB2 is particularly verbose with the type of monitoring metrics that are available. We can have extremely large SMF files that need to be processed. So this is about some improvements to balance the CPU and disk requirements. And so there's a, for folks that are familiar with this, an AC work set of files that are used for sorting and other aggregation, et cetera, in batch reporting. The objective here is to balance and provide the customer some control over balancing the CPU versus the disk space requirements for this, these particular functions here, the batch counting, report, and save functions. So the way this is done is via a new option, the implementation down at the bottom of slide number 31, optimize option that you provide as input to the batch reporter, and this will give you some information to help you control that. The next item is a disk space estimator. It's, again, works together with the prior feature I just described, a batch processing option called calculate. What happens if you specify this option along with a normal report request, but instead of running the reports, you'll get some output that describes what type of disk requirements are required to run this particular counting job. So here's an example of doing this to balance CPU and AC work on slide number 33. So we have the calculate option specified, and then the three different variations of optimize, and you can see that the what comes out in this this log file are a couple of messages that describe how this is going to run. So the allocated space is sufficient, maximum record length, et cetera. So it just gives the customer some control over CPU versus disk space requirements. Moving on to slide number 34. So as I mentioned, as part of the Tivoli Megamon, we pick up items from ITM, and we're based on ITM 6.2 FixPack 1. And so there's some specific items that are of particular value to OMPE, and there are many other things in ITM 6.1 that that may be leveraged in the future. But these are the things that will probably be of more interest to more immediate interest, anyways, to OMPE customers. So the ICAT batch mode improvements, these comes with the framework. I don't have specifics on this, but I imagine you've already heard them because I know Cecile's done some discussions on this Tivoli Tech Talk in other forums. As I mentioned, we take advantage of high availability ZOS Hub TEMS configuration, which is developed in the field probably 2-3 years ago now, and finally making it into ICAT via configuration. So the batch mode improvements here on slide number 35, again, I think that you probably have heard this, so I'm not going to go into detail, not that I could. High availability hub TEMS support is also provided through ICAT and OMPE on slide number 36 here. It comes by way of a couple of common ICAT infrastructure, if you will, fixes. Plus, we provided the enablement on our OMPE configuration screens as well. So that's available in 4.2.0 out of the box. 64-bit integer support on slide number 37 in the agent. As noted here, there are, I'm not aware of actually any specific item on the TEP right now that is 64-bit that we will need to take advantage of, but it is there and ready for the future when that comes up. I know that we've had a request in the past for things that may be coming through a distributed environment. And the Tivoli Data Warehouse is now supported in ZOS. Again, that's nothing that OMPE provides, but comes with ITM. Packaging improvements across the board for all of Megamon, Tivoli Megamon, and those are noted below. I know that many customers that I've worked with have been confused about the amount of media and such that they receive. And so this is a big improvement. One item, again, across the board, for Megamon Zone Z is that we no longer bundle ITM. We instead note it as a prereq. The tech note provided here gives some details on how the packages are put together, or the bill of materials, if you will, if you need more information on that. So I'm moving ahead now to slide number 38. And really what I want to point out is that it's been... By the time 4.2.0 hits the street, it'll be over 30 months since a release of OMPE in the field. 4.10 was released in October 2006. But it's not that we've been doing nothing in that time. We've released a lot of improvements through the maintenance stream in those 30 months. and that's in response to customer requests through FITS, marketing requests. That's in response to maybe competitive situations or in response to deals that are on the table, and just general things that were really required to kind of get some of the gaps filled in basic monitoring, even as a result of merging these two products together. So I just wanted to repeat a few of these things here, just to remind you that all of the type of functionality that is in 4.10 and also now available in 4.20. So 4.10 was primarily about DB2.9, and of course that's continued to be exploited in 4.10 and 4.20 throughout. In 4.10 throughout the last 30 months, in 4.20 release, but IFCA 225 support. It's about storage metrics on the classic interface. One of the biggest items released just last summer in July was support for data sharing groups on the classic interface. Data sharing group support for threads, that is. Statistics and DSNZ parms are yet to come. Zip support, both in the classic and the TEP. IFCID 197, these are we now are able to capture and create situations off of critical DB2 messages in the TEP. There's a bunch of high watermark things that have been added, and this is, again, primarily in the TEP, although a few of them were added to Classic. Some changes for near-term history, VTAM-seq option, so we now can collect to a sequential data set simultaneous to our VCM online near-term history, and that's used to pipe into the batch reporter. That kind of fills a gap that was created when we went with the DB2PM batch reporter versus the Megamon batch reporter as we merged the two products together. So that helps to fill that gap. The CRD, the collect report data, is a facility from DB2PM that we can now run that in batch. It was only online before. It's a nit, the last one there, about thread displays changing. More distributed information on slide number 39 are now in near-term history. We have vast increases in the amount of distributed DB2 usage, and so those types of metrics become more important to customers to surface on our various interfaces. Core ID selection for thread history, okay. Some sub-interval work within near-term history, and this really supports the types of huge workloads that we're getting. As I mentioned, the types of things that we see today are really volume-related, really workload-type related, Java, WebSphere, generating huge amounts of data. The implementation of Acumatic and DB2 version 8 has changed the way that near-term history has to do its collection. The sub-interval parameter helps to manage all of that. Some minor extensions to ATF are noted there. DWL, that was available in 4.10 at the release, but I think we had an SPE sometime subsequent to the GA that picked up one or two more Megamons that we can link to. And this is the Optimization Service Center, the last bullet here, enabled to launch that from the PE client. So before I go to the thank you Q&A, one item that is clearly of interest, and I mentioned it early on, there's been a huge amount of focus in the 4.20 release on our improving our system test environment and our performance test environment. And actually having a performance test environment hasn't been a set of performance metrics released for 4.10, but in 4.20 we'll be running a 4.10 baseline and comparing 4.20 to 4.10 as part of our release. But we're doing a lot of testing focused on CPU, a lot of testing focused on throughput, a lot of testing focused on memory below the bar impediments that we've come across. And so the testing environment has become more and more robust. We're in CST now, which is the organization that produces the RSU. We've been in there since about the middle of the third quarter, and we are now appeared on the RSU report for the fourth quarter of 08. We're also looking into participating in the PET. We've actually been in the PET for some time, the in Poughkeepsie, but in probably increasing our usage of that environment to expose our early code to some more workload. So making a lot of changes that are really what 4.2.0 is about quality, reliability, stability, throughput, and all those things. We're taking those things that we're doing and we're modifying them for, or extending them rather, for 4.10 customers, as well as leveraging the 4.20 environment. So I want to make sure that that didn't go without mentioned. Quality is more than just the work that you do underneath the covers. It's also the effort that you spend on the back end, making sure that those things have panned out. So at that point, I'd like to open it for any questions that I can hopefully answer.
Hey, Steve, this is Ed Woods.
Hi, Ed.
Hi. On slide 4, you mentioned something about net on the bus. I didn't see anything else later in the presentation. Do you have any specifics on that?
I'm sorry, so I mentioned something about, what was it? I know you're breaking up. I got to slide 4.
Yeah, it was about net cool and omnibus.
Okay, yes, I did. Yeah, I'm sorry, I did not mention it. All we did is we provided, I think it's, we had to provide some, what are they called? Not DLA. We had to turn over some parts to be able to integrate with the latest versions of Omnibus.
And yeah, and this is common for all the Omega months. So all Omega months now support to send when the situation fires, to send event to both tech and Omnibus.
Right. This came it was across the board requirement, and we turned in. Geez, I wish I could remember what they're called right now, Fabio.
Yeah, the Baroque files are the tech one. I don't remember the name of the Omnibus ones.
Yeah, Baroque, that's the word I was looking for.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
All right, any other question for Steve? All right, so next week we will have the Ising team that will cover the storage offering, so not just the Omega Mon XC for storage included in that offering, but also a set of, I think they have 6 storage solutions branded as Tivoli coming from this, the Ising offering that will be covered next week. And then we're going to stop for a month because of a restriction that Joao asked us to put on for third quarter sessions, and we will resume the next round of tech talks in April. Feel free to send me requests for topics coming from the development organization, and I'll put them in the pipeline. So if there are no other questions for Steve, let me thank Steve for the presentation, and I just wish you all a good rest of the day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining. Have a great day.